One's a couple of dreamers, just people seem to be able to keep it on the company. What did we read in the last class? Who remembers? What did we hear of that? Remember? Yeah. Oh. You are it, yeah. Another man, Prabhu. They offered everything to Govardhan. Krishna had stopped the Indra Jagya, the sacrifice for the pleasure of Indra. And Krishna had done that, and he had instituted, he had spoken the Kama Mamangsa philosophy, and he had begun, he had suggested that instead of worshipping the demigods to get rain, we should worship our karma, our work. And what is our work? The cows. And because Govardhan Hill provides such wonderful manam tinotisa goganayos tevayat pariya suya vasa kandara kandana mulai, such wonderful facilities for the cows, for the cowherd boys, caves, soft grasses, roots, fruits, water. So Govardhan Hill should be worshipped too, and the Brahmins should be worshipped. So Krishna in this way stopped the Indra Jagya. And he instituted the worship of Govardhan Hill. This one of the reasons, there were three reasons given by our acharyas why this occurred. One is he wanted to institute a yearly joyous festival called Govardhan Puja, which happens in the month of Kartik, where Giriraj and the cows and Govardhan Hill are worshipped. And second, he wanted to remove the pride of Indra. And third, he wanted to perform a pastime underneath Govardhan Hill by which he and all the Brijbasis, his most beloved devotees, could be together. So we'll talk about one of those three, that Indra's pride is going to be removed by Krishna. Krishna is the master. Indra is going to say several chapters later that Krishna is the master teacher because he knows just how to act in such a way that his purpose is accomplished and the person comes to his own realization. It will take its time perhaps, but the person will realize. If someone tells you this is true and it's like this, it's like this, it's like this, no one will accept that, or it's very difficult to accept it, because our mind may be thinking something completely different. But Krishna arranges, Indra will say, circumstances in such a way that he's talking about himself, will come to the right conclusion and learn what Krishna wants him to learn. So now, before someone's pride can be removed, it has to be manifested. And that's what we're going to hear about now. Because the sacrifice was stopped, and Indra, before he lost his pride, he manifested it in a wonderful, powerful, very extreme way. So Sukadeva Goswami says, "My dear King Parikit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their Lord." So this is actually quite difficult to understand in one sense. Indra is a demigod, he's a devotee, and he reacts so extremely to a simple sacrifice being stopped, which was meant to propitiate him. But he becomes so angry, and we'll hear this, that he decides to destroy all of Vrindavan. Why again? Because this one sacrifice was stopped. So it seems very extreme. It is extreme. But just see the nature of anger. When one is angry, one is capable of doing anything. And in a very extreme way, because anger is like, it's like the perversion of samadhi, where one's consciousness becomes fixed on the absolute anger. One's consciousness becomes fixed in the mode of ignorance upon what one wishes to do, and then one is capable of doing anything. One doesn't see any balancing points. One just sees only what one sees in that very, very heavy mode of ignorance. So that anger that Indra experienced, and again, it was so extreme that he wanted to kill all the residents of Vrindavan and all the cows and flood the entire land. It came because of his pride. So we can imagine how huge his false ego was at this time. His false sense of self, because he's going to say, how dare they stop this? How dare they do this to me? How dare they? And because they have done this to me, stop my sacrifice, they deserve to die. So this is the nature of pride. And therefore Krishna said previously it was like a mountain. He wanted to remove the mountain of Indra's pride. And yet, Indra was a demigod. And yet, he had that pride, which turned later into such extreme anger. He was furious. And again, when one is furious, one's capable of anything. So that sense of false ego, that sense, how dare they, don't they know who I am, came from his occupying this very powerful position. So at least he had a good reason to be proud. He was an exalted position. But yet, and it's so interesting when one will think, they don't know who I am, and you turn that around and it becomes true. Because what we see in others often usually reflects back on ourselves. They don't know who I am becomes I don't know who I am. And who was Indra? Indra was, first of all, a tiny, insignificant soul. 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size. How just imagine how small 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size, the size of a jivatma. So tiny. If you take a head of a hair, I can't even find one. There's one. Back there. And then you split it down the middle in half. You can't even, it's a point. So you can't even split it in half practically. And then you split that in half again, and then you have a quarter. And then you split that a half again, and you have an eighth, so it's pretty small, and then a 16th, and then a 32nd, and then a 64th, and then again. So it's completely insignificant, and yet one is thinking, you can't even see it, practically speaking. And then one is thinking, you don't know who I am, I'm so significant. And you have dared to stop the sacrifice, you have done something that I don't like. And therefore Mahaprabhu recommended the only counter to this consciousness is Trinada Bisini Jainan Turoda Bisina Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari, that we become tolerant like a tree, more humble than grass that everything steps on. Every animal, every human, every bicycle, every tractor, every car. There's grass, everything will go right over it. But more tolerant than grass or trina. Because What happens when you step on grass? After you move your foot, it comes back up again. So more tolerant than that is stay down. Don't even come up again. So this is actually exalted consciousness. Either one becomes in exalted consciousness, one's always depending on Krishna in that mood, and in unexalted consciousness, one's completely depressed because one's so insignificant, so down and downtrodden. That's the mode of ignorance. So in any case, Indra's mountain of pride is going to be manifest. And then by Krishna's mercy and Krishna's arrangement, it's going to be removed. Because in the material world, everyone loses track of what's important and what's not important. We think temporary things are important. And we forget about the eternal, because you can't have both. You can't have your consciousness fixed on the temporary and fixed on the eternal at the same time. So when we think like those old-fashioned scales, when the weight is on the temporary, then the eternal becomes very light and insignificant. So Sukadev Goswami says, "My dear King Pariket, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other coward men. Oh, they have put aside my sacrifice. They don't know who I am. They're accepting Krishna as their Lord and on Krishna's word. Who do they think he is?" So here's the purport here. At the very beginning of this chapter, Sukadev Goswami reveals the foolishness of Indra and the absurdity of his anger. Indra was frustrated because the residents of Vrindavan accepted Sri Krishna as their Lord. But the simple fact is that Sri Krishna is the Lord, not only of the residents of Vrindavan, but of all that exists, including Indra himself. Thus Indra's petulant reaction was ridiculous. As the common saying goes, pride goes before a fall. So indeed, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "This chapter describes how Lord Indra, overcome by anger, sent rain to destroy the people of Braja. To protect Braja, Krishna held Govardhan Hill in his left hand for 7 days. Sukadev Goswami immediately reveals the foolishness of Indra and the absurdity of his anger." Foolishness and absurdity. To be foolish and not know you're a fool is very dangerous. To be foolish and know you're a fool and not act based on that foolishness is humility. So angry Indra, this is text 2, sent forth the clouds of universal destruction. So he was so furious. The same clouds that fill up the universe with water at the time when destruction is to be manifest. He was using those on Vrindavan because they had foolishly, the coward men had foolishly stopped his sacrifice. And the word, the Sanskrit word, ishamani, he was falsely thinking himself the controller. He had that mind, that abhiman, that conception of himself. I am Indra, I am the controller. And of course this is the danger of any position or any power, any opulence, is to start thinking, I am Ishwamani, I am the controller, I have so much. But of course also in Kali Yuga, even if one has nothing, one is thinking of pride in a prideful way. big false egos. This is the greatest opulence of Kali Yuga, and the manifestation of contemporary civilization and culture. That's all that gets bigger, is people's concept of themselves. And the rest of the world appears more and more foolish because no one is acknowledging my greatness and how the importance of the universe being organizing itself around my desires. Kali Yuga. This is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's comment on the second text. This verse describes Indra's anger. Samvartaka refers to the clouds used for destruction of the universe. Cha indicates that the seven winds of destructions, such as Avaha and Pravaha, were also sent. I don't know the difference between all these different winds. But clouds and wind and lightning and rain and thunder. Due to excessive pride, Indra arrogantly considers himself to be the supreme controller. Isha money. That's what's in his mind. I am the Isha. Text 3. Aho Sri Madha Mahatmyam. Madha means intoxication. Let's see how everything, if you look at what disturbs you and others, it turns back just on you. So he says, Aho, just see, Sri Madha, because of their opulence, the Madha means intoxicated, Mahatmyam. Look at the great extent of their intoxication due to their opulence. Of who? He could really say of me. But of course, no one says that. He says, these coward men, Gopanam, Kanokasham. These coward men, they're intoxicated and they're bewildered completely because they have some power. And look at them. What are they? Just forest dwellers. And Krishnam Martyam Upasritya, they have taken shelter of this ordinary person, Krishna. Ye Chakru Deva Helanam. Offense. And because of their taking shelter of Krishna, they have Hela, neglected or committed offense against the Devas. So this is such a common thing every day, practically. We think like this, or I think like this. How dare they do this? They're so foolish, they don't understand who I am. They're committing this offense again. They're intoxicated by what? I don't know. They have no opulence. I'm so wonderful. So this is the power of the illusory energy of Krishna, because in fact, again, it is us who don't know who we are, and intoxicated by our little opulence that is Krishna given anyway. Here's Indra said, I am astonished to see the amount of wealth and bliss of these coward men. This is really what he's saying. Being inspired by Goddess Saraswati, we can understand that Indra was actually saying that the coward men had offended him by taking shelter of Krishna, whom Indra considered to be Martya, a mortal. Krishna is called Martyam because he appears to give auspiciousness to the ignorant souls of the material world. So this is the hidden meaning of what of Indra saying, that these people have so much opulence. It is amazing. But he's only seen the beginning of their opulence. Text 4. They're taking shelter of Krishna. This is Indra speaking. Is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandoned transcendental knowledge of the self and instead tried to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruit of ritual sacrifices. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, Vaishnavas desiring to cross the ocean of material existence take shelter of Krishna, and they reject the quest for Brahmagyan, knowledge of Brahman. Indra said, these coward men have become absorbed in a sacrifice as a means to cross the ocean of material existence. The Vrijvasis have foolishly taken shelter of Krishna in hopes he will reduce the ocean of the water, the ocean to the water contained in a calf's footprint. So he's criticizing them, and that's exactly what Krishna does. Lord Brahma earlier has said this. Samasritam ye parapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya shomarari bhavam buddhiya vatsapadam vatsapadam parampadam paramparam yad vipadam natesham, that the water, that the material world shrinks down, the ocean of the material world shrinks down by, for one who takes shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, it shrinks down to the water that is fills Vatsapadam, the footprint of a calf, not even of a cow, but of a calf. For one who takes shelter of Krishna, look what Indra is accusing the coward men of doing. They're taking shelter of Krishna. And they're thinking in this way they'll cross over material existence. And material existence will shrink down to the size of a calf's footprint. Otherwise, it is insurmountable. So he's accusing them of the actual correct thing, doing the correct thing, in fact. And that's what it means to take shelter of Krishna, to hold on tightly to Krishna's lotus feet, to chant his names in all circumstances, and don't let go no matter what happens. And Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pranadana, except Krishna is everything, with no other shelter. That's what the coward men had done. And Indra didn't like that because he wanted to be the shelter. He thought they needed him to cross over material existence through sacrifice. It's Indra's yajna. Very much offended. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur comments. Vaishnavas desiring to cross the ocean. Oh, I read this. He said the Brijvasis have foolishly taken shelter of Krishna in hopes he would reduce the ocean to the water contained in a calf, the hoofprint of a calf, which is exactly what Lord Brahma's conclusion was. And later, Indra will have to go to Lord Brahma and ask him how to get out of the predicament of having offended Krishna. Text 5. These cowherd men have acted inimically towards me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna. Vachalam bali samstabdham agyam panditamaninam. He's called Vachalam. Over-talkative. Balisham. Balisham. He's a child, stubborn, he's arrogant. And look at the qualities that he's accusing Krishna of. Here he is saying these things. He's accusing Krishna of being over talkative. And who's over talkative here? Balisham, a child, he doesn't know what he's doing. Stubdham, arrogant, agyam, foolish, pandita maninam, thinking himself wise. Krishnam. He's accusing Krishna of this. Martyam, a human being, upashrita, they have taken shelter. The coward men have taken shelter and have acted against me unfavorably. And they soon shall understand my power. And they will understand their foolish activity. I will kill them. So this is extreme anger, extreme insanity, practically speaking. Here's the comment below here includes the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so I'll read it. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, through the insults of Indra, Goddess Saraswati is actually praising Krishna. He's trying to insult Krishna, but the Acharyas show how his insult is actually praise by the mercy of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. The Acharyas explain, Balisha means free from pretension, like a child. Just like a child. Stubdham means that he bows down to no one because there is no one for him to offer homage to. So that one, Balisha, means like a child, means he's free from pretension. He doesn't have to pretend anything. Stubdham means he's arrogant, and the Acharyas have said it means that he doesn't have to bow down to anyone. Agyam means there is he's foolish, he doesn't know anything. I explain it means that there's nothing more for him to know because he is omniscient, he knows everything. Pandita Maninam means he thinks himself wise, means that he is highly honored by the knowers of the Absolute Truth. They think him wise. And Krishna means he is the Supreme Absolute Truth whose transcendental form is full of eternity and ecstasy. Martya means he's an ordinary person, and they explain it means that although he is the Absolute Truth, he nevertheless appears in this world as a human being out of affection for his devotees. Indra wanted to rebuke Krishna's vachalam. Vachalam means talkative, because the Lord had presented many audacious arguments in the line of Kama Mamangsa and Sankhya philosophy, even though he did not accept those arguments. Thus Indra called the Lord Balisha, foolish. Indra called him Stubdha, because he had spoken boldly even in the presence of his own father. Stubdha means arrogant. So he's showing the other meaning of those words. He had spoken boldly even in the presence of his father. Thus, although Indra attempted to criticize Sri Krishna, the Lord's transcendental character is, in fact, impeccable. And this chapter will demonstrate how Indra came to recognize the position of the Lord. Text 6. To the clouds of destruction, in his angry mood, Indra said, "The prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride. And their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now, go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction." Very heavy. But there's nothing an angry person will not do. Here's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment to text 6. Indra said, "Due to wealth, these coward men are mad with pride, and their minds have become influenced by Krishna. You should remove their pride and kill their cows." The unintentional inner meaning of Indra's words is as follows. The coward men are anointed with sandalwood pulp, Shriya Avalipta. You clouds should remove Dunita, the heat in their bodies, with cool rain, and refresh the cows, making them tremble in delight. When Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, you should allow him to make a beautiful place, Sanyak Chayam, to stay. The word Chayam means residence as well as destruction. So the Acharyas have turned around Indra's words to make something sweet and beautiful, while his intention was something angry. So Indra says in text 7, "I shall follow you to Braja, riding on my elephant Aravat, and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the coward village of Nandamaraj, Maruts." In the end of the sixth canto, the Maruts, the birth of the Maruts, who are Indra's associates and brothers, the 49 wind gods, 49 or 50, sometimes described, are they were born of the womb of Aditi. So they're Indra's associates. So he took them with him to give so much trouble to Vrindavan. So he went with the clouds, the Sambhartaka clouds. Here's Vishwanath's purport. Indra spoke to the frightened clouds. I will also come behind you, desiring to destroy the coward pastures of Nanda. The real meaning is, I am also coming, desiring to see the coward pastures of Nanda. Because indeed, he was very fortunate to see Krishna in Vrindavan. Text 8. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the coward pastures of Nanda Maharaj. And there they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. So very heavy weather. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word Marud Ganai indicates the seven great winds, such as Avaha, who preside over the region of Bhuvalok, and Pravaha, who holds the planets in their places. So very powerful forces. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on 9. Indra sent forth the Samvartaka clouds, which could cover the entire earth with a single vast ocean. Losing his discrimination because of anger, Indra released those clouds without considering the magnitude of their power. Rumbling with thunder, the clouds moved here and there, being pushed by Avaha and Pravaha winds. The clouds poured down hailstones. 10. As the clouds released torrents of rain, as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and the high ground could no longer be distinguished from the low. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. No, I won't read the comments. 11. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the coward men and ladies, pained from the cold, all approach Lord Govinda for shelter. So Indra has shown his great, great power, and indeed it was great, by calling the powerful clouds to pour down water. And these clouds had incredible potency. And what did the residents of Vrindavan do when confronted with this danger? They did what they always do. And what was that? They called for the help of Govinda. They knew nothing else but Govinda. As it describes later, because they knew that Gaugamuni, during the name-giving ceremony of Krishna, he had said, Anena Sarvadogani Yuyam Agyas Tarishyata. That, because of Krishna, you will be able to cross over all difficulties. So this was the habit of the residents of Vrindavan. No matter what difficulties they were placed within, they always and simply took shelter of Krishna. It was completely natural for them. There was no force. This was their natural consciousness. Krishna, 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 Govinda, Govinda, Govinda. They didn't know anything, no other shelter but Krishna. So they all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is what they said. Oh, this is the coward men. And Mataji said, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhagatvanatam Gokulam Prabhu Tratumarhasi Devana Kupitavaktavatsala. Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhaga. Oh, Mahabhaga means you are so fortunate. Oh, fortunate one. Why is Krishna fortunate? He possesses Sada, Shwarya, Purna, all opulence, or wealth, or strength, or beauty. Krishna, Krishna, they called out. Tvanatam. Gokulam Prabhu, you are the Lord and Master of Gokul, of the land of Vrindavan. Tratamarhasi Devana Kupitam Bhaktavatsala. You are very, O you, O Bhaktavatsala, O you who are very affectionate to your devotees. Tratumarhasi Deva Na Kupita. Please protect us, kindly protect us from the wrath of Indra, who was Kupitam, who was very angry at us. Here's the translation. The coward men and women addressed the Lord, Krishna, Krishna, Mahabhago, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are affectionate, so affectionate to your devotees. Please save us also. So they presented the appeal primarily on behalf of the cows. Very, very sweet. Here's the purport. At the time of Lord Krishna's birth, Gagamuni had predicted Anena Sarvadogani Yuyam Agyas Tarishyata. By his grace, you will easily cross beyond all difficulties. The residents of Vrindavan were confident that in such a great emergency, Lord Sri Narayan would empower Krishna to protect them. They accepted Krishna as everything, and Krishna reciprocated their love. And please note how they could not conceive it would of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They'll interfere with the directness of their love for him. But they always thought, oh, he's such a wonderful boy, he's such a nice, such a very sweet and great young boy. And Nanda Maharaj is such a great devotee of Narayan that if Krishna wants to do something, by the mercy of Lord Narayan, who is the Supreme Lord, then Krishna will be able to do it. Krishna's always protected us in the past. He protected us from the forest fire. He protected us from this problem. He protected us from this demon and that problem and that demon. So Krishna will always take care of us, and he's always protected himself by the mercy of Narayan. Because if they thought of him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the intimacy of their affection would be removed. So seeing the inhabitants, this is text 14, of his Gokul rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was the work of angry Indra. Kupitendra Kritam Hari. Hari understood that this was Kupitendra, the work of angry Indra. And this is how he reacted. Here's the purport for us. We'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's words. Even before being informed that the rain was created by Indra, Krishna understood that Indra was responsible. The severe distress Indra apparently inflicted upon the residents of Vrindavan was an arrangement made by Sri Krishna's pastime potency, his Leela Shakti, so that Krishna could taste the sweetness of their prema, the love of the residents of Vrindavan, to his full satisfaction. For a hungry person, the pain of hunger increases the happiness he feels when he finally eats excellent food, and thus hunger can be said to enhance the pleasure of eating. So the pain that they were feeling would enhance the satisfaction that they get when they get Krishna's shelter and taste the sweetness of his association underneath Govardhan Hill. Like hunger increases the satisfaction. This is the example Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives. If you're very hungry, there's even more satisfaction when you eat. So similarly, the shelter of Krishna gives one more satisfaction if one is in distress and taking shelter of Krishna, as are the residents of Vrindavan. Fifteen. So this is what Krishna is saying to himself. Because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonable rain, together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness, they falsely consider themselves the Lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this first text, 16. Krishna said, I will remedy the situation through my mystic potency, Atma Yogena. Being falsely proud of their power due to the mode of ignorance, these demigods think of themselves as lords. I will now destroy this ignorance. This verse refers not only to Indra, but also to Vayu and the other demigods who assisted him. And comment. Comment by Srila Srila Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami's short comments. 16. Srila Srila Swami comments. Thus, how he lifted Govardhan in accordance with his promise is stated in this verse beginning, Tatra, I will save them with my mystic powers, completely counteracting the disturbance by Indra and destroy their ignorance. Thus, I shall arrange by my own capacity the means of counteracting this, and by that means I will remove the ignorance characterized by their false pride and opulence of those who out of delusion consider themselves controllers of the world. By the use of the plural number there, here the Lord is also thinking of the Maruts and other demigods who are of Vayu, other demigods who are assisting Indra. Jiva Goswami says, Atma Yogena means by his internal potency known as Yogamaya. The plural number in the words Loka Isha Manimam is with the idea of instructing others by the punishment of Indra. He, Indra, is simply insane because otherwise he would not do this. Text 17. Nahi sadbhava yuktanam suranam isha vishmaya mato satam manabanga prasamayo pakaupate. Since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the Lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false pride of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. So Krishna, this is Krishna's dealings also with us, not only with the demigods who are supposed to be endowed with the mode of goodness, but sometimes get afflicted by lower modes of material nature. That Krishna's attempt is to break our pride, our sense of greatness, our sense of prestige, because these are very heavy things to carry around. They are great weights that sink us, practically speaking, into the ocean of material existence. So to bring them relief, to bring us relief, Krishna always manages somehow or another to confront us with our illusion, our smallness, our insignificance, our weakness, our pride, our faultiness. And thereby, he removes the burden of this pride from us, if we react properly. Here is the purport here, and then we'll read Vishwanath and Srila Sridhar Swami. The demigods are supposed to be Bhava Yukta, endowed with spiritual existence, since they are deputed servants of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Brahmapanam Brahmahavir Brahmagno Brahmanahutam Brahmaivatena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. That which is duly offered to the Lord becomes spiritualized. The demigods engage in the devotional service of the Lord by managing various departments of cosmic administration. Therefore, as demigods or servants of the Lord, their existence is pure sadbhava. When the demigods fail to live up to the high position given them by the Lord and deviate from proper behavior, they are not acting as demigods, but rather as conditioned souls. Mana, or false prestige, is certainly an anxiety-ridden burden for the conditioned soul. A falsely proud person is not truly peaceful or satisfied because his understanding of himself is false and inflated. When a servant of the Lord becomes asat or irreligious, the Lord saves him from impiety by breaking the false prestige that has led him to be offensive or sinful. As stated by the Lord himself, Yasyaham anugrami harishya taddaram shanai. I give my blessings to a person by taking away his so-called opulence. Of course, the advanced stage of devotional service to the Lord, as described by Rupa Goswami, is yukta vairagya, utilizing the opulence of this world to execute the Lord's mission. Obviously, the things of this world can be used wonderfully to spread the glories of God and to create a godly society. And a more advanced devotee will not be seduced by material paraphernalia, but will dutifully and honestly engage it solely for the pleasure of the Lord. In this particular case, Lord Indra forgot that he was a humble servant of God, and Lord Krishna therefore arranged to bring this bewildered demigod to his senses. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on text 17, short comment. But it may be questioned, the demigods are in the mode of goodness, and also your devotees are in the mode of goodness, so how can they be influenced by ignorance? That is replied by the verse beginning with Nahi sad bhava yuktanam. Sadbhava means the mode of goodness, or else means devotion for me, since there does not exist for the demigods who possess this sadbhava or devotion for me, the false pride that we are the supreme controllers. Therefore, such persons are not sat. They are not acting as devotees. Furthermore, destroying their pride is actually mercy, as the Lord states by the word beginning mata. Matas asatam. By me, asatam, of the impurity of their false prestige, I will eradicate it. Bhanga, I will break it. Pasamaya, for relieving them. Upakalpate, this is the intention. So this is why, again, Krishna places his devotees sometimes in difficult circumstances to remove their pride, because it is such a burden, because it is an illusion. And to maintain, if something is real, to maintain it is easy, because it's real, it cannot be broken, it cannot be taken from us, it's eternal. But if something is an illusion, it is so difficult to maintain it. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, and I am not going to quarrel in such a way with this very insignificant Indra, but rather I will mercifully cure him. My devotee, I will cure him, my devotee, of this fault which has arisen in him. The Lord speaks this idea in the verse beginning, Nahi. Because such false pride never occurs in the demigods who are endowed with the mode of goodness or devotion for me. Therefore, my now destroying the prestige of such persons who, because of being situated on the path of unrighteousness, are asat, or non-devotional, is actually for the purpose of prasama, or diminishing the disease of their pride. So this is Krishna's kindness. Although when Krishna is chastising someone, it doesn't feel like kindness, it feels like very exacting punishment. Not pleasant. But this is actually Krishna's kindness. This is what he's saying. It's being done to diminish the disease of their pride. So this is the overview. The child may experience the chastisement of the parents in one way, but the parents only have the good of the child in mind. So their view has to be taken of the circumstance, because their view is bigger. Text 18. Krishna continues, I must therefore protect the coward community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Tasman mat saranam goshtam mannatam mat parigraham gopaye svatma yogena so ayam me vrata aditaha. Here's the purport here, and then we'll read Vishwanath's comment. The word matsharanam indicates not only that Lord Krishna was the sole shelter for the Brajajan, the people of Vrindavan, but also that Lord Krishna had established his home amongst them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from the Anarkartavaga dictionary, Sharanam griha rakshitro. The word sharanam can represent either home or protector. The residents of Vrindavan adopted Krishna as their beloved child, friend, lover, and life itself, and the Lord reciprocated their feelings. Thus Sri Krishna lived amongst these fortunate people, moving in their houses and fields. Naturally, he would protect such intimate devotees from all types of danger. And we'll read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment to 18. I will protect the coward community from this disturbance created by Indra, because Vraja is my home and I am the master of this house. The Anarkartavarga dictionary says, Sharanam griha rakshitro. The word Sharanam can mean either home or protector. Krishna said, Vraja is the only place where my father, brother, and dear ones live. Not only will I protect these people from this disturbance, but I protect all people, even at the time of Mahapralaya, the annihilation of the universe. To indicate this, Krishna says, I have made vrata ahita. I have taken this vow to protect. And then the final verse we'll read. Having said all this, this is what Krishna is going to do. Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. Purport. It is confirmed in the Harivamsa that Sri Krishna picked up the Govardhan Mountain with his left hand. Sadrita Sangato Mega Giris Savyena Panina. With his left hand he picked up that mountain which was touching the clouds. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when Lord Krishna was preparing to lift Govardhan Hill, because he was in his house when all the rain was taking place, and it started to rain so much, and when he was preparing to pick Govardhan Hill, a partial expansion of his yogamaya potency named Samharika temporarily removed all the rain from the sky, so that as he ran very swiftly from the porch of his house to the mountain, neither his turban nor other garments became wet. So everything is arranged for Krishna's pleasure. And in case you haven't noticed it in the material world, nothing is arranged for our pleasure. So this is Krishna's kindness. Now, what I wanted to read is Srila
Kavi Kanapur's description of the same thing.
Over here, from Ananda Vrindavan Champu. So this begins, this description begins when Indra found out that his sacrifice had been stopped. Meanwhile, the demigod Indra developed a headache due to being ignored and forgotten by the Vrijbasis. He couldn't tolerate it. We will now describe how he tried to get relief and revenge by employing excessive rains. While sitting amongst the demigods, Indra felt sad and distressed seeing that his sacrifice had been cancelled. Burning with rage, Indra said, "Just see how surprising it is. The intelligence of these coward men is just like the animals that they tend. They stop my puja just by hearing a few words from a mere child. Even though many goddesses of learning praise me, those offensive coward men did not think twice about giving up my worship. Have they been overtaken by pride? False pride. O virtuous coward men, now you act deviously without fear of anyone. Well, I will see how long this lasts. This foolish, arrogant, and talkative child has offended me. Even though you claim he satisfies your desires and gives you long, prosperous lives, we will soon see if he is actually your well-wisher by what he's told you." Overcome by revenge and frustration, Indra considered for a moment how to retaliate against the Vrijbasis. Angry Indra then released the powerful clouds of universal destruction known as Samvartaka. Coming before their master, the clouds submitted, "We are your servants and always ready to execute your order." To encourage his servants, Indra glanced at them with affection and appreciation as he addressed them, "Hung ho, O my speedy clouds, who are famous throughout the world for distributing profuse rain. Your pride and your power fills me with strength. Now make me successful by carrying out my orders. You have the unadulterated mood of destroying the whole creation within you, but this assignment involves destroying only one small region. Go shake the earth with your thunder and destroy the village of Vrindavan with a great flood." So being released from the task of devastating the universe at a particular time, Samvartaka and other servants of Indra proudly stepped forward to accomplish their mission. First, a great bank of clouds appearing like a huge patch of moss in the sky blocked out the sun and covered Vrindavan in total darkness. Extending from Rasatala to Swargalok, the cloud covering looked just like the smoky breath exhaled by the naga snakes. Released from their bonds, a few ominous clouds in the sportive mood of breaking the Kedara mountain quickly spread across the sky. These dense dark clouds appeared as massive as the celestial elephants guarding the quarters of the globe. Another group of dangerous clouds circled overhead. The clouds, like Mount Mainaka, the son of the Himalayas, continually expanded and freely flew in the sky without any fear of being cut by Indra's millions of thunderbolts. One fantastically large cloud bank appeared like a second Loka Loka mountain range. The hard peaks of those clouds continued to grow higher and higher while simultaneously expanding in all directions. When the clouds collected, they covered all the planetary systems in darkness. Even the sharpest axe could not cut through the dense darkness of clouds that assembled over Vrindavan. The three worlds appeared to be born out of the darkness created by that ever-expanding cloud bank. The covering of the universe turned as black as the soot smeared on the bottom of a pot. However, the universal disturbances and the attack of the devastating Samvartaka clouds had practically no effect on Vrindavan, which continually bathes in the moonlight emanating from Krishna's jewel-like toenails. After earth, water, fire, air, and so on, there is a tenth element known as Andhatama, Tamasa, blinding darkness. Everything animate and inert in the 10 directions appeared stunned and stupefied by this element. It seemed that no one in the world could see anything. Water dripped from the dome-like coverings of the universe. The water drops moved so fast that they formed a continuous stream of water speeding through the universe like a raging river breaking over its dam. Such a thing will never happen again. That torrential downpour seemed like the long hanging branches of the banyan tree of the sky. The cows sheltered their calves under the blankets of loose skin on their necks. In fear of the slashing rainwater, the cows kept their eyes almost closed and their tails hanging straight down. As they shivered uncontrollably from the violent rains, the skin on their backs swelled up. While standing in this painful condition, they looked towards Krishna for shelter. When the rain hit the horns of the bulls, it bounced off and landed on their thick, fatty humps, breaking into small pearl-like drops that then rolled down their broad, muscular backs. Alas, alas, the fierce rainfall angered and tormented the bulls. And observing the torrents of rain, which fell in columns as thick as the trunks of full-grown banana trees, the coward men of Vrindavan thought that the devastation had suddenly arrived. Terrified and weakened, they approached Krishna, who makes everyone happy. Full of pain and agony, they said, "O Krishna, you always save us, and you always give us happiness. Now we are in great danger. Since you are the Lord of Gokul, you should immediately protect us. Look, look, the flashing lightning bolt appears like the forked tongue of an angry snake. The pounding hailstones are pulverizing the life out of the trees. The lightning bolts entering the water seem like the brilliant fire emanating by mythical hydras. The clouds ferociously roar as they release torrents of rain as thick as massive columns. The vast sheets of water increasing in volume like the ocean of devastation. The earth is quickly submerging in the flood, and we cannot distinguish the high ground from the low. Just look around, O Krishna, and see for yourself. The Sarabi cows use their own bodies to protect their calves. Calves from the pelting hailstones. With their tear-filled eyes, they are speaking to you. O Krishna, once you saved us from the devastating forest fire, so please save us from this terrifying rainfall. Look at the condition of the bulls. Upon hitting their humps, the heavy hailstones are being ground into pieces and are scattering on the ground like pearls. Their eyes reddened in rage. The bulls raise their heads to look angry at the clouds. Their faces and bodies are completely drenched in water. Oh, how much they are suffering. This devastation seemed like the personification of a big anarta which we cannot remove. Only you can deliver us. O Krishna, therefore we surrender unto you. We are your loving kinsmen, so please save us. After hearing their anxious pleas and seeing the distress of his cows, Krishna, whose blooming lotus eyes are beautiful to behold, he considered, this must be the work of angry Indra. In a compassionate voice that was sweeter than honey, Krishna consoled his family and friends. Do not be afraid. Actually, this trouble is as insignificant. This trouble is as significant as a hunger pain is to one who has just consumed a sumptuous feast. Anyone practicing devotional service can easily remove all anartas. The Kanaras and the demigods glorify this fact. For your benefit, I will now enact a special pastime to destroy Indra's mountain of pride. As the relisher of nectarian rasas, Krishna had a beautiful body, which is as sweet as the honey in a flower. Without even tightening his cloth, he showed complete indifference to the mighty wrath of foolish Indra. Instantly, Krishna picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft, with no more effort than a child takes to hold a mushroom or an elephant uses to lift a clump of grass. So we'll stop here. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, all the Vrijvasis ki jai, Bolo Giriraj ki jai. Om Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.